This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast. Hey, what's up? Hello, guys. Welcome to episode 9 of the Real Talk with Dana podcast. This is going to be my first listener questions episode. So I took questions from you guys from my email, from direct messages on Instagram, from Facebook, from comments on the Instagram post that I put up asking for listener questions. So if you ever have a question or a topic that you would love me to talk about on the podcast, feel free to email me, Instagram me, send me a message wherever you can find me, and I will definitely talk about it at some point. So I'm thinking that since today is January 1st, or January 31st, if you're listening to it on the day that it comes out, we're going to do a mostly Whole30 centered questions, listener questions episode, because if you started on January 1st, you are doing your reintroduction right now. If you started on the 2nd, today is your day 30, and congratulations because you made it through the Whole30, and that means that you are basically a badass. So yeah, I think today we're going to do mostly Whole30 type questions, and then the next couple of episodes would be more general stuff. Next week, I'm going to do an episode entirely on adrenal fatigue. So if you have any questions about that, definitely shoot them my way. And before we get started, I just want to give you guys a couple of updates, stuff that's been going on around here. So this past weekend, I did my first Olympic weightlifting competition, which was freaking amazing, and I had a great time, so I will definitely be doing that again soon. My January Whole30 group is coming to a close. Most of the people in there have either finished their Whole30 this week or they'll be finishing it next week. However, I still have a couple of people that just signed up this week because they want to do a February Whole30, so if you want to sign up, I will put the link to that in the show notes. I'm going to be running two more official groups in May and September, so it's definitely not too late to sign up. And for everyone, if you're listening to this the week that it comes out, the Super Bowl is this weekend, aka I know you need some totally epic Super Bowl eats in your life. So I will post a link to my favorite Whole30 and paleo-friendly slash epically delicious Super Bowl recipes in the show notes. And now let's get to the questions. Okay, first question here. When did you do your first Whole30 and what were the biggest lessons you learned from your first one? So I did my first Whole30 back in February 2013 with my CrossFit gym. And the biggest lessons I learned from my first one. Definitely the biggest thing that I learned overall was that the scale is a lying sack of shit and you shouldn't use it to determine your happiness, the way you feel about your body, and your self-worth, which is exactly how I had been using it before my first Whole30. Because before I did that Whole30 back in 2013, I was addicted to the scale. I weighed myself every single morning, and that stupid little number determined how I would feel, how I would eat, and how I would work out the rest of the day and the rest of the week. And as you probably can tell, it wasn't healthy. It was horrible. And can I tell you something? After that first Whole30, I actually gained weight. I think about a half a pound, but still. So you can imagine my immediate reaction was frustration, anger, like what the actual F, right? I was expecting at least some kind of weight loss from doing the whole 30 days of clean eating, of exercising, of not stepping on the scale or counting any calories or macros or anything. And the weird thing was, like, I was sleeping well, I felt fantastic, I had huge amounts of energy in the gym, and still, I hadn't lost weight. So that's when I realized that who really gives a crap about what the actual number on the scale says? Because if you're feeling amazing, you're eating well, you have loads of energy, and you're finally not letting your cravings control you every day, or letting your self-worth be defined by that number on the scale, if all of that is going right, I probably needed to gain some weight in that situation. I probably hadn't been eating enough before I started the Whole30. And that also meant that it was time to take a real hard look at what I actually thought was healthy, which at the time was under-eating and over-exercising and not being honest with myself about it. So basically at that point, I broke up with the scale for a really long time and stopped letting it determine how I felt about myself. I still weigh myself every once in a while. If you heard my updates at the beginning of the episode, I competed in an Olympic weightlifting meet this past weekend, and you have to fit into a particular weight class to do that. So obviously I had to weigh myself to make sure I was in my weight class. But luckily for me, I fit right in with my weight class, so I didn't have to like cut a lot of weight or anything. So yeah, it's a good tool to check in whenever you go to the doctor or every once in a while. But honestly, I think you should be measuring not your weight, but how you feel about your body based on the way your clothes fit, the energy you have, like all of that kind of stuff. Non-scale victories, as we call it in the Whole30 world. Okay, next one. And these first couple of questions, I forgot who asked me the questions, so I'm not going to mention their names because I can't remember who they are, but the next couple I will. So this one is, what are your recommendations for beginners doing a Whole30? My number one recommendation would be to actually read the Whole30 guidelines, the rules and recommendations, and not just the yes-no foods list, because a lot of people think that the Whole30 is just an elimination diet, and it is so much more than that. I mean, if you've listened to my other podcast, you know it's trying to reset not only the foods that you're eating and rewire your cravings and your hormones and stuff like that, but it's changing your health, your habits, and your relationship with food. And you can't do that just by following a yes-no foods list. So one thing that I would do is definitely grab at least one of the Whole30 cookbooks or the new Whole30 day-by-day book that came out in December. I would sign up with a Whole30 coach for individual coaching, or I would join a Facebook support group like the one that I ran in January, and I'll be running two more in May and September. What are your favorite Whole30 cookbooks? Okay, well, that fits in really well with the last question. So obviously, the official Whole30 cookbooks are great. The new Whole30 Fast and Easy cookbook is a really good one for beginners because all of the recipes in there either take under 30 minutes to prepare or they have like five ingredients or less. I also love all of the Nom Nom Paleo cookbooks by Michelle Tam. Almost every single one of the recipes in those two cookbooks that she has, the first one is called Food for Humans and the second one is called Ready or Not. Almost every single recipe in there is Whole30 friendly, and if it's not, then it's easily adapted to be Whole30. And then the other author who I think does a really good job at putting out Whole30 recipes in her cookbooks is Melissa Jewell-Wan, who does the Well Fed series. So it's Well Fed, Well Fed 2, and then Well Fed Weeknights. And I'm pretty sure the subtitle is like recipes for people who love to eat. And one month during one of my Whole30s, I actually cooked through not an entire one of those cookbooks, but I made 28 recipes from one of her cookbooks, and every single one was delicious. So highly, highly recommend. Okay, next question. What are some of your current favorite Whole30 products? Oh, this is a good one. Okay, so new products that I've tried during this Whole30 are ButcherBox, which is a grass-fed, organic, pasture-raised meats company, and they deliver like monthly or every other month, depending on what you want, organic beef, pasture-raised chicken, pasture-raised pork. They even have Whole30 bacon, which has been awesome. And then another one is Zupanoma, which I just discovered this month, and they do Whole30 approved their soups, and they come in like little juice bottles. I really like their tomatillo kale jalapeno one, I think is my favorite right now. And I actually get kind of bored if I'm just drinking them as a soup. You can do it cold, hot. I actually like using it as a sauce over like chicken or meats that I've meal prepped so I don't get bored with them throughout the week. Another one that I just tried for the first time last week is Hungry Harvest, which they're a CSA delivery company that specializes in doing what's called imperfect produce. So they take the produce that grocery stores don't want because they think it's going to go bad too soon, and they recycle that into a CSA box and they ship it to you. So it's a lot cheaper than a normal CSA would be, but it's a really convenient way to get in a bunch of different kinds of veggies in your diet. And then the last one that I've been using a lot during this Whole30 is Territory Foods, which is a local meal delivery service that has a Whole30 option. So unlike Blue Apron or Sunbasket or any of those things where they give you the ingredients but you actually have to make it yourself, Territory is actually pre-made for you. And since you can check off the Whole30 filter, you don't even have to look at the ingredients because it's already done for you. And I think they're in, I know they're in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. I'm pretty sure they're in, I want to say the Dallas area and then San Francisco and maybe one other one, but I'll double check on that. Okay, now on to the questions where I actually have people's names. But these are Instagram handles, so if I mispronounce your name, I'm really sorry, but some of these are hard to read. This one is XO Elise Eats. Do you have any advice for doing a Whole30 in college? Yes. So I never did a Whole30 while I was in college. However, I do know how to do a Whole30 very well as a single person running their own business. So AKA Whole30 on a budget. So one thing that I would definitely do is you obviously should cook most of your meals at home, because as soon as you try to eat out, especially Whole30, if you're a newbie, the meals can be very bland when you're eating out and you're basically just overpaying for something that you could have made better at home. Meal prepping and batch cooking is a huge time and energy and money saver. And I have a couple of posts on my favorite recipes for Whole30 meal prep. Probably my number one tip would be to stick to simple meals. Whole30 eating doesn't have to be super fancy. It doesn't require expensive ingredients like nut flours and coconut aminos and, you know, the Primal Kitchen dressings and mayo and the Tessemaze dressings and all that stuff is really great and super tasty. But if you're sticking to a really strict budget, you don't need those things to be successful on your Whole30. And I would just stick to the less expensive ingredients. Stay away from stuff like macadamia nuts are super expensive. Like organic raw cashews and almonds are super expensive. Just stick to the basics and you'll be good. And then whenever you do need to get pantry ingredients, I have a whole blog post about doing a Whole30 on a budget or the like a pantry stock up guide. And I always use either Thrive Market or Amazon to get all of my pantry stuff because it's so much cheaper than the same ingredients you can find at Whole Foods are going to be at least twice the price of the ones that you'll find either on Amazon or Thrive Market. And then as I was mentioning before, you can do for vegetables and fruits, I'd highly recommend you do a CSA, whether it's Hungry Harvest or you have a local farmer's market that you can get stuff from, because that'll be a lot cheaper than buying all of your ingredients at Whole Foods or something like that. Okay, M. Dales. Being sick on the Whole30, I've been battling a cold and flu thing for the past two weeks, and it's made this Whole30 much harder than my last one. All I want is a grilled cheese or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I've read the Whole30 post about it, but it's still putting a major damper on this round. So it can be really common for people to get sick in the middle of their Whole30, whether it's because it's January and it's flu season and cold season, and then your body's also going through all these changes, so your immune system is a little bit down, so it's like, oh, here's a sickness. I'm going to come along and just put a huge damper on your Whole30. So a couple of things that I would do, give yourself a rest, right? Like if you don't need to go into work, if you don't have a huge meeting or something, stay home and rest, because not only are you going through the first 2 weeks of the Whole30 where you're already not having the best of symptoms and you haven't reached tiger blood yet, you might be experiencing some digestive stuff, some mental emotional stuff that's going on as your body is switching over to being basically from a sugar burner to a fat burner. But if you get a cold or the flu that goes along with it, like it's just going to be a shitstorm of feeling awful. So definitely get more rest than you need. Drink a lot of liquids. So I have a post on natural cold and flu remedies that I'll link in the show notes because it'll go into much more detail than I am going to right now. But soak up the vitamin C-rich foods, take extra vitamin D, lots of liquids, probiotic foods. Definitely go with some homemade bone broth or get some from Thrive Market or the store. But again, if we're talking about, honestly, the best bone broth you can have is the one you make at home because it'll always taste better. And then you can make it according to your taste buds too. And green juice is also a really good idea just to make sure you're getting in your vitamins and nutrients when you're sick because you probably all you feel like eating is really bland foods. But make a soup with your bone broth and just chill and hopefully it will get better soon. Okay, next one. Adventures of Liana. On the bloating and distended belly. I've tried Whole30, with which I've had the most luck, keto, intermittent fasting, and I'm currently following a regime from Balanced Health, which does food sensitivity testing. I have metal toxicity, lots of sensitivities, hypothyroidism, and adrenal fatigue, but I still struggle with bloating and distension on a daily basis, even though I'm following this regime. I also eliminated all fruit, and I'm only taking in a small amount of maple syrup in the morning. I know this is normal in the beginning of Whole30, and it will take months to heal my body, but it's very uncomfortable, and I know many others have this question. Do you have any other tips to help during the healing process? So for bloating and distended belly especially, the number one thing that I can recommend is bone broth because it's going to soothe your intestines, and sometimes when you're so bloated and you don't feel like eating, that's a really good thing to get in. The glutamine in the bone broth is going to help heal your gut, which could also be causing your bloating and distended belly. A lot of people will notice during the Whole30 when they've started to eat a lot of new vegetables or they're eating vegetables in quantities that they're not quite used to, that they definitely can have a lot of bloating, especially in the first 2 or 3 weeks. So I'd recommend cooking your vegetables if you're experiencing bloating and distended belly. Another culprit that it could be is to look into FODMAPs. And these are different classes of foods that are fermentable sugars when they break down in the body. So there are certain FODMAPs that you eliminate already with the Whole30, like legumes and dairy and grains and gluten. But there are still other foods that are FODMAP foods that can cause bloating and indigestion, like garlic and onions for some people can really cause that if you're very sensitive to FODMAPs. So I would look into that. And then also another thing that I've been noticing is a lot of people on their Whole30, when they get bored with just drinking plain water, they will start drinking a lot of LaCroix or a lot of sparkling water. And I'm sure you know if you drink a lot of sparkling water, like you're going to start burping, and that's because there's a lot of gas building up in your stomach. So that can also be another cause of bloating. If you're doing all of these things and you're still experiencing bloating and a distended belly, I would look into doing some digestive enzymes because those will help settle any of the food that's currently in your system that's causing the bloating. Okay, next one. Brenly Goertsen. I'm really sorry if I pronounced your name wrong. I recently saw your post on the Whole30 story about food with no breaks. I too have a strong love for nuts and nut butters. I seriously thought I was the only one who was nuts about nuts. No, you are. You're definitely not alone. I often feel like I need to resist them completely because I'm a very all or nothing person. When I try portioning my consumption, I seem to always slip into a binge, eating much more than I am intending to do. Do you have any tips or advice on how to handle your nut dragon? Oh my God, I love that you just called that a nut dragon. That's amazing. Okay, so in general, if you've determined that a food, whether it's a Whole30 food or not, is a food with no breaks, you have a couple of options here for how you can tackle it. The first one is you can be more mindful when you eat that food, meaning don't do mindless eating, like eating the food in front of the TV while you're doing work, while you're checking emails, or doing things like eating nut butter straight from the jar or eating nuts straight from the bag. if you do that, you're not going to notice how much you're actually eating, and that can end up being a lot of food without you even noticing. Another thing you can do is limit the amount or frequency that you actually eat that food. So for example, if we're talking about plantain chips, which are not Whole30, but those can be a food with no breaks for a lot of people, and the Super Bowl is coming up this weekend. So save them for special occasions like football or tailgates or at a Mexican restaurant if it's corn chips, or you are going to have to be more conscious of the amount that you're eating. And going along with the mindful eating thing that I was saying before, instead of just like shoving the food in your mouth and not really tasting it, how about you actually take the time to chew the food and actually enjoy it? Because if you take the time to slow down, chew your food, actually taste your food instead of just washing it down with water or something, you'll actually enjoy the experience and you'll be much less likely to overeat that food because you're getting the satisfaction of the taste that you were craving when you wanted to eat that food. And then the third one is you could cut that food out altogether. And that's a good short-term strategy, but it's not a very good long-term strategy if you're really trying to go towards healing your relationship with food and food freedom. So on this point, we do really need to work on moderation, because a lot of people for whom the Whole30 works really well for, we are all or nothing people. But in order to fix that relationship with food so you don't binge on a food every time you eat it, is we need to shift away from the all or nothing mindset. Because right now for this person, it seems like you're stuck in either I'm going to eat it all or I'm never going to let myself have it mentality, because when I do have it, I binge on it. So there's kind of a fear around this food that every time I eat it, I'm going to binge, so I'm just not going to let myself have it. The thing is here, you have to not fear that food and not let it control you. And obviously this is very much easier said than done, and it takes a long time to get over it, but you can do it, and you have to have the confidence that you will be able to eat this food without binging on it eventually. Maybe it's not today, maybe it's not tomorrow, but you will get there. I found personally that the way I got over this with nuts and other foods that I used to binge on was I would keep them in the house all the time. And that might seem kind of counterintuitive, because you're like, wait, if I have them in the house all the time, then won't I just binge on them all the time? Well, here's the thing. Sometimes foods that you binge on are foods that have novelty because you don't have them around all the time. For example, going back to the plantain or corn tortilla chips, a lot of people don't keep those at home, but they totally binge on them when they go to a Mexican restaurant because it's a novelty. You only get to eat these when you're at a Mexican restaurant, or you only get to have them when you're at a Super Bowl party or something like that. So by keeping nuts or chocolate or whatever it is around all the time, it loses that novelty, so it becomes actually less appealing on an everyday basis. And you have to acknowledge also here that there are probably going to be times when you will overeat and when you will binge on that food, but you have to be okay with that because it's a part of the long-term learning process that you have to go through in order to basically make peace with this food and stop binging on it. Because when you realize that you actually can have this food whenever you want, and you truly allow that food to be around in your life, you're much less likely to binge on it because the option is there to eat that food all the time. So I hope that makes sense. And I'll probably be talking about food addictions and getting over binge eating and all of this kind of stuff in a future episode, but I just wanted to start talking about that now in the context of Whole30. So another tip that you can put in place while you're working on this process for nuts and seeds specifically during the Whole30 is a lot of people will find that they have a different reaction to raw, unsalted nuts or nut butters versus roasted, salted nuts, and that you'll have a totally different reaction to them. Because roasted and salted nuts, for the most part, are much more a food with no breaks for a lot of people. But raw, unsalted nuts don't have the same palatability that the roasted and salted ones do. So you might actually not tend to overeat them at all. Another thing you can do is just keep these on hand with the intent to use them in recipes and not just for snacking. For example, to put them like in a Whole30 friendly pad Thai sauce if you keep sunflower seed butter around, or as a garnish on salads or bowls or anything like that. Okay, next question is a little bit more condition specific. We're going to talk about Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease where your body attacks your thyroid. And this person is asking how you should approach it during the Whole30 and whether you should eliminate nightshade vegetables during the Whole30 for an autoimmune condition. So a little bit of background here. She says, I'm being absolutely perfect in my template, no snacking either, lots of water and light exercise. I'm not seeing results on the losing weight side, which she thinks because she hasn't weighed herself during the program yet, so she can't be sure. So with Hashimoto's or any other autoimmune disease, it's a really good idea to consider the possibility of either following an autoimmune protocol in addition to the Whole30, which eliminates nightshade vegetables, nuts, seeds, and a couple of other things that can be potentially inflammatory, like eggs, to autoimmune conditions, but not necessarily for just your general person who is doing the Whole30. Hashimoto's also, I should say, makes it a lot more difficult to lose weight because you're dealing with hormonal imbalances, since the thyroid is the master endocrine gland and the master metabolism controlling gland. But back to nightshades. So what the heck are nightshades if you've never heard of these before? So nightshades are a family of vegetables that includes eggplant, tomatoes, white potatoes, but not sweet potatoes, all kinds of peppers and pepper spices, including like bell peppers, cayenne, all that kind of stuff, hot sauces, and all of their derivatives, plus some other random little things like goji berries and ashwagandha are actually nightshades too. So who should avoid them? Nightshades are contraindicated, which means they are not recommended for people with arthritic conditions, autoimmune conditions, and other inflammatory conditions, because those foods have a very high potential to cause inflammation. So for example, think of how if you're watching like Man versus Food or like some kind of food challenge, when people eat super, super spicy foods and it makes their face turn red, that's like a very extreme example of how these pepper spices can cause inflammation in your face. So this doesn't mean that all people with autoimmune conditions have to eliminate nightshades forever. The only way to tell is to eliminate them for a certain period of time, and the Whole30 would be a really good time to do that, and then to reintroduce them as part of the reintroduction process and see if they are actually causing any kind of inflammatory issues for you or not. In my clinical practice and with my Whole30 groups, I've noticed that the people that this makes the biggest impact on is people that have rheumatoid arthritis, because that is an inflammatory condition of the joints, and people notice when they take out the tomatoes and the pepper spices and stuff that their inflammation actually goes down. Now, for some people, they will find that nightshade vegetables don't affect them, but other things that we eliminate on the autoimmune protocol, like, for example, eggs and nuts and seeds, will affect them. So if you have Hashimoto's, I would highly recommend trying the autoimmune protocol. You could do it in addition to the Whole30, but that would make it very restrictive, or you could do the autoimmune protocol on its own and then reintroduce one food group at a time and see how you react to that food group. Okay, now we're going to do a little bit about some food freedom and reintroduction questions. So I had someone ask me yesterday on Instagram, can I introduce soy sauce on the same day I reintroduce legumes? And the answer is a huge no. The reason for that is because soy sauce is fermented with wheat. So if you're introducing soy sauce on the same day you reintroduce legumes and you have a reaction, you're not going to know if it's the gluten in the soy sauce that's causing a reaction for you, or it's the legumes that are causing a reaction for you. So definitely wait on soy sauce until you do your gluten reintroduction and reintroduce legumes by themselves. Okay, next one from TJ Campbell. I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for a protein or snack bar. I love whole ingredients and want to stay balanced. I'm not worried about the calorie content right now. I actually need more in my life, hence the bars. Just some clean options so I'm not snacking on the wrong kinds of things. So some of my favorite snack type bars, and some of these are Whole30 and some are not, definitely RX bar is a good one to keep on hand. That's It bars, which are just fruit. It's usually, I want to say like strawberries and blueberries or banana and mango, something like that. And you can get those at Starbucks. I really like those. If you like jerky and want more of a natural high protein bar, I would go with Epic bars or DNX bars. Simple bars, or I think they're also called simple squares, are really good ones. And then one that I really like if you are an athlete or if you can do a little bit of whey protein and tolerate dairy, Perfect bars are really good. They're definitely more of a meal replacement or like denser bar. They do have some that are vegan so that they have no whey protein in them. But honestly, the vegan ones have a lot higher sugar content than the ones that have whey protein in them. And I'm pretty lactose intolerant, but I can tolerate the small amount of whey that's in these. So that would be a good one to look into. The peanut butter one, if you can tolerate peanut butter, tastes exactly like a peanut butter cookie. And the blueberry cashew one is also out of this world. Just saying. Okay, last question, I think, for now, because this is all the Whole30 questions that I got this week. What are some of the things that you've successfully reintroduced and eat in your food freedom? Oh, well, that goes nicely with this last question. So I will say that I've done the whole fast track reintroduction multiple times, and my body has changed a lot over the years after going through leaky gut and healing my gut after adrenal fatigue. It changes with the seasons what foods my body really likes. So it's taken me a while to get here. And my first couple of Whole30s, I didn't tolerate as many foods as I do now. So for example, the first couple of Whole30s, when I tried to reintroduce dairy and legumes in the form of hummus, it did not go over well at all. And I would avoid those like the plague. And then the same thing went for all grains. I didn't tolerate any of them. Even white rice didn't go well for me. And then I noticed after a couple of years, I had been so strict on the no grains thing that I was just really getting sick of it. And I just, my body just like was really craving rice. So one day I just thought, you know, I'm just going to eat white rice and see what happens. And it turns out that my body really liked white rice. So I started eating it for a while. So that works well for me now. I also figured out that quinoa works pretty well for me, which I don't really eat it that often, but it's good to know that I don't have a negative reaction to it. On the other hand, I really don't do well with oats, even gluten-free oats, which is interesting because I used to eat those all the time before my first Whole30, like oatmeal probably every single morning kind of girl over here. I can have them once in a while, but not very often, like maybe once every couple of weeks. I haven't tried like oatmeal cookies or anything like that, so I'm not really sure how that would go, but just a bowl of oatmeal is a little too much on my system. I've noticed that I can do small amounts of dairy, which has been really nice because cheese is the best, and then small amounts of hummus, but only certain kinds. And this has been really interesting and kind of a trial and error process that I've been playing with over the last couple of months. So if I eat Sabra hummus, I want to say, or any hummus that has either soybean or canola oil in it, I really do not do well at all. But there is a brand, I don't think it's Cedars, but I do well with the Kava hummus, which is local to DC, and that's awesome. There's another local brand that I like at Whole Foods that doesn't use canola or soybean oil, and so that one works well for me, so I can eat that every once in a while too. And obviously, I'll eat chocolate and sugar every once in a while, though I'm still trying to play around because I notice that some forms of dark chocolate really don't make my stomach feel great and other ones feel totally fine. So still working on different theories for that one, but I will report back to you guys. And one good thing to keep in mind, and I was talking about this with my Whole30 group the other day in our reintroduction Q&A, a lot of people were asking questions on how can you make sure your sugar dragon doesn't come back? And the really sucky answer to that is it's going to come back unless you just don't eat a lot of sugar at all. Because sugar is so addicting that if you start to eat it consistently again, or even if you just have like a big chocolate chip cookie or a slice of cake on your birthday or something, the days following that, your taste buds have already changed so fast that you're gonna start craving sugar again. And the only way to get rid of that is to go back to a couple of days of low sugar, more vegetables eating, maybe more healthy fats and proteins to kind of get over those cravings. But as soon as you start encouraging those cravings by eating sugar on a more consistent basis, the sugar dragon is going to come back, which stinks, but it's just life. So you have to kind of decide how much sugar you want to consume on a regular basis and how that makes you feel, and just figure it out for yourself, because that is your food freedom. Okay, I hope you guys loved this listener questions episode. I know I had a lot of fun answering your questions and hearing all of the different things that you guys wanted me to talk about. So again, next week I'll be doing a podcast all about adrenal fatigue, so send me your questions about that. I'm definitely going to do more listener questions episodes in the future. And let's see, in case you missed it on the blog this week, I have three, as of tomorrow, Thursday, I have three new Super Bowl friendly recipes going up. So I've got a creamy cashew ranch dressing, which is a dairy-free, egg-free ranch dressing. Well, I can't speak English today. That's fine. It's a creamy, dairy-free ranch dressing, which is totally delicious. On Tuesday, I put up a barbecue cauliflower poppers recipe, which is perfect for the Super Bowl. And then tomorrow, Thursday, I'm putting up this recipe for what's called irresistible wings. And holy moly, you guys, you need these for your Super Bowl party. So that's it for today. Come find me anywhere you like at Real Food with Dana, Facebook, Instagram. Don't bother following me on Twitter because I don't do things over there. If you love the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, because it'll help other people find us and find the tribe and spread the good food word, which we definitely want to do. And come check out all of these blog posts that I was talking about at realfoodwithdana.com. Talk to you soon.